Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is Sunday morning, and good morning, everybody. Well, let's see. I was able to park the Ark a little bit up the street. My goodness, it has really been raining, hasn't it? Well, good morning. I'm Bob Salter. Welcome to our program on The Fan. And on our show today, we have a busy hour with you between 6 and 7 on Sunday mornings. We're always pleased when we have guests join us in studio, and especially someone who has joined us before. Allison Cohen is in studio with us today. She is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. We're at that time of the year. We'll be talking about that annual Thanksgiving radio tradition, Hungerthon. Yep, it's Hungerthon time, and talking about the work of Why Hunger. A couple of other guests are going to join us by phone as well in the course of this hour. First of all, Allison, it's nice to see you again. Welcome back.
Thanks, Bob. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having us back every year.
Well, we do enjoy having you come in and share some thoughts with us. You know, let's get right into talking about why hunger and the situation with hunger, because that's one of the things that we're going to be exploring in the course of this hour. And we have guests who have very interesting perspectives in that area, too. Here we are. It's almost the end of 2019. A little bit of background, first of all, on why hunger. And then the second question for you is, as we end 2019, where are we in terms of, I guess, the real situation with hunger, and especially hunger in New York City?
Sure. So Why Hunger is a nonprofit organization. We have been around since 1975, and we were founded by the late Harry Chapin and the radio DJ Bill Ayers. And they founded the organization on the fundamental belief that access to nutritious food is a human right and that hunger is a solvable problem. And Why Hunger still has that fundamental belief at its core. And we are working to build broad-based social movements that are led by folks at the grassroots level, by grassroots community-based organizations, community leaders that are changing the systems, policies, and institutions that perpetuate hunger and poverty around the world. We are a grassroots and a movement support organization, which means that we are investing resources, funding, training, technical assistance to build the capacity of innovative grassroots organizations across the U.S. that are working at the root causes of hunger and poverty. We want to really help to strengthen and multiply the impact of their local solutions, really amplify the voices of those who are experiencing hunger and poverty and who are sitting right in the center of the solutions.
And when we talk about Hungerthon, Hungerthon really runs from November 1st through the end of the year.
Through the end of December, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. And you can learn more about Hungerthon at hungerthon.org.
And the big day in terms of the radio broadcast regarding Hungerthon is?
It's Tuesday, November 26th. Is that correct?
That's
Did I
correct.
Get the date right?
You got it. You got it's just 2 days away.
2 days away. Woohoo! Hungerthon.org. Yes. So we take over the airways and get an opportunity to really talk about and advocate to end hunger and to really lift hunger up as a right to nutritious food.
Okay. Let's talk about that point, because this idea of nutritious food being a human right, you know, as I say that and look at those words on paper and think to myself, this isn't brain surgery, okay?
Right.
Shouldn't this be
right.
common sense?
Yes. Yes, it should. And we've over the past, I would say, 5 or 6 years, we've started really lifting up this phrase about nutritious food as a human right, which automatically brings us to the to a certain kind of perspective or lens or analysis that says, you know what, charity is not going to end hunger. It is really, really important that we have these thriving food banks and thriving food access organizations that are helping people now, but that is not what is going to ultimately end hunger in this country. And so we really have to get down to the root causes of hunger, which in so many things are, you know, it's, there's an intersection of many different things that lead to hunger, but poverty is probably the central one. And those kinds of broad-based change can only come when the folks that are experiencing it are really advocating for changes in systems and policies and institutions. And two of the folks that we're going to have on with us today have a deep history in New York City food policy.
And the situation here in New York is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. We'll explore this whole role of food policy over the course of this hour as well. You know, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking also of some of the people who are listening to our discussion who they may say, well, wait a minute. The idea of ending hunger, is that really possible?
It's possible. It's possible. It's very possible. It takes a certain amount of political will. It takes, I think, one of the reasons that we're so grateful for this opportunity during Hungerthon is that it really it requires a certain amount of investment in understanding what some of the root causes are. And so we have this opportunity on the air this month to really talk about some of the underlying issues and to get at the roots and to try to dispel this myth of everyone in our country can just simply pull themselves up by their bootstraps, that this is just a myth that does not explain the reality for folks that are living in hunger and poverty. And I can give you an example of that. We run the National Hunger Hotline, and recently we had a call from a gentleman named Mike from Southern New Jersey, and he had a really successful business for more than 30 years, but his wife, Sasha, unfortunately developed stomach cancer, and they had to sell off everything to pay for their medical debt, and they lost their home, and they lost their business, and they struggled to get back on their feet. They didn't have much money left for groceries. And that is when they called the hotline, and we were able to connect them to a source of access to fresh fruits and vegetables, and including helping them to access SNAP, which is the food stamp program, and other things. And so we're it's fantastic that we have those social safety net, but we're seeing that social safety net really become frayed. And we'd like to strengthen that social safety net as one way to really ensure that folks have the right to nutritious food.
And, you know, as you're saying that, I'm also thinking what it must have taken for him even to make that call.
Yeah. I mean, you're a local entrepreneur. You have a successful business for 30 years and one really tragic event, and you're struggling. Mm-hmm. You're struggling to feed yourself, and someone battling with a health crisis actually needs that highly nutritious food. We all need it, but in those situations, it's critical.
Mm. Now, I guess the other aspect of this discussion gets into exactly who's listening on the political side here. Has the receptiveness improved over the years to this message?
We think so. We think so. We're one of the indicators, and it's difficult to sort of completely identify the impetus. But hunger is down in the U.S. a little bit. It was, I believe, last year when I was here. It was the USDA. Economic Research Service said that hunger was at about 40 million people. This year, this past year, the stats came back at 37 million. That's 1 in 9 people. That's still abysmal and very high and unnecessary in a country like ours. And especially when you're talking about of that 37 million, 11 million being children. So 1 in 7 children. We often don't think about those that are the most vulnerable in our society. I mean, 11 million children. Also in rural areas, where there are about 13% of households in rural areas experience hunger. And that's another thing that I think, particularly as we are residents of New York City and the surrounding tri-state area, we don't always think about rural areas as experiencing high levels of hunger, but they are experiencing it higher than we are in urban areas.
Mm. All right. Our first guest by phone is standing by. Would you introduce Ray for us?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Hi, Ray. Good morning. Ray is she works with me at Why Hunger. Very happy and proud to have her as a part of the U.S. programs team. And she provides technical and logistical support for organizing shared learning spaces, which is a critical way in which we connect grassroots community groups to one another. She is a phenomenal writer, and so she is managing a lot of the editorial content for our U.S. programs at Why Hunger. And she also provides some support to our hunger hotline, which I referenced earlier, and the growing database of food access organizations around the country. And before coming to Why Hunger, Ray worked at the New York City Department of Health in the Center for Health Equity, and she supported food access initiatives started by community members in Brooklyn. She is a proud founding member of the Central Brooklyn Food Cooperative, which is coming into reality every day, and she's still supporting other food sovereignty work locally.
Ray, good morning. Welcome to our program here on The Fan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and thank you for that lovely introduction, Allison.
I'm going to put the same question to you that I stated to Allison a few moments ago. How would you describe the hunger situation here in New York?
Here in New York, I think it is systematically a lack of access for folks who are low income and mostly of color. And so for those folks, a lot of the systemic things that have been happening, including gentrification right now, but things that have long been happening throughout the decades, have caused either the infrastructure to not have enough adequate places for fresh fruits and vegetables, but then also systematic things that are happening that cause low employment and all of those things that are the root causes of hunger. So for years, the folks who live in communities like I live in Bed-Stuy, where there's 57 bodegas for every grocery store, cannot access fruits and vegetables. And there's not a lot of policy created to address that. So I see it as a system of, throughout the decades, creating cities that don't have that in mind, and then also creating policy that don't focus on those people who have long not been able to access fresh fruits and vegetables for their families for generations.
Mm. Well, it's an interesting situation. We've got a lot to explore. What we're going to do is take a pause in our discussion, come back with you and with Allison, and be able to talk more about this topic. We'll also mention the fact that during this discussion, during this month through the end of the year, you can be involved in supporting the efforts of Why Hunger. Go to hungerthon.org. You can get information there about donating, getting involved in making real solutions to this idea of ending hunger in this country.
Salter Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan. We're talking with guests from Why Hunger, and we're talking about the topics of hunger and poverty on our program this morning. As you've been hearing, hungerthon.org has a wealth of information available along the lines of things we're talking about. You can also make a donation in support of the efforts of Why Hunger. Hopefully we're giving you some reasons and some motivation to do that in our discussion. In studio with us is Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. And joining us by phone on our program is the manager of U.S. programs for Why Hunger, Ray, is it?
Gomes.
Gomes, yeah. Last name is pronounced Gomes. Ray has just started talking with us before we paused on our break. Allison, you wanted to put a question out to
Ray. Yeah, so I wanted to, I know Ray and I have had this conversation with each other before about who really needs to be at the policy table when we are talking about and designing policy for New York City in order to ensure that folks get access to good, high-quality, nutritious food. And I wanted, Ray, for you to expand on that a little bit and then maybe tell us about one or two initiatives that you're familiar with.
Sure. So, you know, in the absence of good policy, communities have created their own solutions to address the lack of access. And so things like community gardens, farm stands, the Central Brooklyn Food Co-op, of course, have all been efforts for the community to address the lack of access to fresh foods in the community. And so food policy in New York City had historically, you know, been a conversation among electeds and consulting firms and a couple of nonprofits. And, you know, opportunities for the community to share the types of solutions that they have been working on, but on a very small scale, have not really been available. And so food policy decisions that are made to address the community's problems didn't have the community at the center of it. And so, you know, the community needs to be at the center. They need to be at the table addressing the problems that they've long been having accessing fresh fruits and vegetables. And so, you know, a good example of that was that in 2014, 2015, the governor had this initiative to strengthen connections between upstate farming and downstate consumers, and so wanted to create a food hub just as the food hub in Hunts Point in the Bronx, but for Brooklyn, and didn't really have a lot of community voices at the table. And so a group of those of folks in the community, community-based organizations, wrote a letter basically calling that out. And so in a different iteration of something very similar, it became part of the Vital Brooklyn Initiative. And so they've worked with Ags and Market, but also with community groups to, you know, create a feasibility study and then also to figure out just what type of food hub would work in Central Brooklyn. And so a food hub is really a way for communities to have easier access to food, both wholesale and retail operations. And so in order to understand what type of infrastructure would be appropriate for Central Brooklyn, this initiative looks a lot different from previous initiatives in that it really has the community input, and there's been a very large effort, I've been included in that, to make sure that each step of the process is reported out to the community and is bringing back their thoughts about it, their analysis about it, and to keep that as a part of the conversation. And, of course, as Allison mentioned, the Central Brooklyn Food Co-op is, you know, all about community self-determination. An effort, it was started by folks in Bed-Stuy, primarily some folks in Crown Heights, you know, talking about what is the best way to increase food, access to good food in the community. And so that conversation and process has taken place for the past 6 years. And we're at a point where we're looking for real estate. And, you know, all of this has pretty much happened in the absence of direct elected support. You know, there are solutions at the table. There are ways that community is creating their own solutions. And what would help it is to have more support, more resources from government agencies, from policy. I mean, for example, if the food co-op was able to benefit, the food co-op would definitely benefit from a policy that would say any community-owned grocery store can have a government-owned building for a cheaper lease or for no lease for the first year while they're establishing. I mean, that would be an amazing policy that would help this effort really take off the ground.
Right, essentially to facilitate the community solution, and that should be the role of our local governments.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when we're talking about the significance of Hungerthon and the significance of that to why Hunger's work throughout the year, two things come to mind. One, and I ask this question usually every year because I think it's an important one. What's it like putting Hungerthon together?
Oy. That's what it's like.
That pretty much answered it. Oy.
It really is. It's a time of year when it's all hands on deck. And so, you know, whether you're a communicator at our organization or you're a program folk that's working with people around the world, you're called on to come together and really sharpen our message and do things like get up at 5 a.m. and come and talk on the radio. Mm-hmm. So it's our pleasure, and we're so grateful that WFAN, for instance, supports this effort, and that we get to do this every year. It's an opportunity not just to raise money, vital funds for the organization, but it's also an opportunity to tell the stories and to really center the people who are experiencing hunger and poverty in these conversations. We're not asking you to bring cans of food in. We're not asking you to and again, all of that is important, so please do that for your local food access organization. But we're asking you through Hungerthon, and you can learn more about it at hungerthon.org. We are asking you to help Why Hunger make a lasting difference. We're a 4-star charity. We have the highest rating for excellence in fiscal management, accountability, and transparency. 86 cents of every dollar raised goes directly to our programmatic work. So you can be sure that your money, when you donate to Why Hunger, is spent responsibly and it will have the greatest impact. It will go to help community-based organizations amplify their solutions and tell their stories and bring a variety of different stakeholders to the table to make those solutions a reality. We know, if, for instance, in New York City, that almost half of New York City households lack the income. Half of New York City households lack the income needed to meet their basic needs like food, shelter, transportation, and childcare. And so it is not, we are not going to end hunger. We're not going to end hunger if we are just supporting food access organizations. We can only end hunger if we're looking at some of these root causes. And some of that's going to require significant policy change. Folks need to make a living wage. It's not about a minimum wage. It's about a living wage. And that's something that's going to require multiple stakeholders, not just policy. It's going to require business. It's going to require community members, all kinds of folks coming to the table to help make that a reality.
Ray, I want to thank you for joining us on our program. Ray Gomes is manager of U.S. programs for Why Hunger. We appreciate your perspective in this discussion. Certainly good luck continued with your work.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great morning.
You as well. We continue in our discussion on The Fan this morning. In studio with us, Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, and she's with us for the entire hour of our program. And our second guest is actually standing by to join us in this discussion. She is co-founder of the Grassroots Advocacy and the director of Equity Advocates.
Correct.
Would you introduce Leah?
Sure. Hi, Leah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks both for having me on.
Yes, we're excited to have you. Let me just give a little bit of intro. Leah is an anthropologist and a policy analyst with experience working on nutrition, public health, and benefits access within the nonprofit, government, philanthropic, and business sectors. She is a co-founder of Equity Advocates, and now she's their grassroots advocacy director. And I was really excited to have Leah come on the show this morning to really help us deepen our conversation around the need for New York City food policy. And Leah has worked with New York-based nonprofit organizations and some of our government officials to really advance some of the changes in the food system as a key mechanism to address the underlying structural causes of poverty and inequality. So she's helped to develop advocacy strategies and build organizational capacity for carrying out a public policy agenda to increase food security. So, Leah, thank you so much for joining us, and would love to hear a little bit more about your understanding of the role of food, role of policy in ending hunger and in creating healthy food systems, and what some of the plans that Equity Advocates has to make this a reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you for having us on. So Equity Advocates, we are a nonprofit that works to ensure that all New Yorkers, regardless of race or income, can access and afford healthy food. And as you mentioned, we really approach this by focusing on policy change. So we partner with community-based organizations in New York that are running food access and anti-hunger programs on the ground that are really embedded in community and invested in this work. And we provide them with the policy education and advocacy skills so that they can have a seat at the table when it comes to policy change. And the reason that we focus on policy change is pretty simple. So in New York, over 1.7 million New Yorkers lack access to healthy food options. And we see that the disparities in who does or doesn't have access to that healthy food is too often connected to socioeconomic status or race, right? And that is not a coincidence. We know that food insecurity and hunger is a problem that is often caused or made worse by bad public policy. And so to solve hunger, we need to do more than have charity feeding programs. And that's incredibly important, but we believe really strongly that we need policy solutions to really unravel this history and to address the root causes of hunger. And then even more, we believe that those that are most impacted by a lack of healthy food access should be the ones that are really determining what those policy solutions are, right? And so our focus is about building up the capacity of groups on the ground who know what's working and know what's not working, what needs to change, so that they can really engage in advocacy and, you know, build relationships with policymakers and help be the ones who are driving impactful food policy change so that we have good policy change moving forward.
In other words, you want to have a change that's going to last, that has some real effect to it.
Exactly. And that recognizes the work that is happening in communities,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, so government has its place and philanthropic charity organizations have its place. But really, when you look at some of the most successful anti-hunger and food access programs, they are often community-driven and community-owned. And our belief is that when you listen to folks that are living in communities that have historic lower access to healthy, nutritious, high-quality food, that are living these experiences day-to-day, you're going to hear the solutions that actually need to happen. And so we want to make sure that those voices are reaching, you know, New York City Hall, are reaching Albany, are reaching Congress, and are saying, these are the kinds of policies that we need so we can do our work better. These are the kinds of public funding decisions that we need to see. We need to see you investing in our work and in our programs so that we really see those kinds of community-driven solutions thrive and scale.
Okay, we're going to take a pause in our discussion. We'll come back, talk more with you, Leah, and also with Allison. 6:40 is our time.
Radio.com. Radio. BobSalter.com. Bob Salter. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan.
And Sports Radio 66. WFAN.
It's always nice when those singers stop by on Sunday mornings. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We're in discussion on our program talking about issues surrounding hunger and poverty. It's that time of the year, the time for the annual Thanksgiving radio tradition known as Hungerthon. Hungerthon.org, a website where you can go get information along the lines of things that we're talking about in our discussion here. Allison Cohen is in studio. She's Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. Leah Cabron Eden is joining us as well. She's co-founder, grassroots advocacy director of Equity Advocates. Allison, one thing I wanted to do here, because people join us at various points in discussion, in terms of Hungerthon, mm-hmm. what sort of things are there that will be available for people to take advantage of if they are kind enough to make a donation to support the efforts of Why Hunger?
Sure. So you can learn everything at hungerthon.org, but let me just highlight a few things. So generously, WFAN has joined our auction, our online auction. You can bid at hungerthon.org/WFAN, and we have all kinds of sports packages for sports enthusiasts to bid on. Tickets to various games and concerts and things like that. So please go to hungerthon.org/WFAN. And then every year we have a couple of signature T-shirts and other items. We work with artists like Bruce Springsteen, Carlos Santana, Yoko Ono Lennon to create T-shirts that, like the one that I'm wearing, royal blue, gorgeous T-shirt that says, "Imagine There's No Hunger." John Lennon's, Imagine, based on John Lennon's Imagine song. We have a Hungerthon T-shirt. We have a tote bag. We have a Hungry Heart sweatshirt and T-shirt from Bruce Springsteen. These are all gifts that you can receive when you make a donation to Why Hunger.
Okay. You wanted to pose a question to Leah.
Yes. So, Leah, I wanted to... The Equity Advocates, and you can learn more about this organization, this New York City-based organization, if you equityadvocates.org?
It's NY, as in New York, nyequityadvocates.com. So, yeah, you can learn more about us, sign up for our newsletter, donate, et cetera, all there.
Okay, great. And I wanted to ask you, what is your vision? Like, what do you and folks working with Equity Advocates want to see happen in the next couple of years? What are you working to bring about?
Yeah, so I would say two big, huge, lofty goals. I think one is real policy change that would advance food equity and health outcomes and economic outcomes for lower income communities in New York. So real policy change, but that's real long term, right? And so I think our vision for the shorter or the nearer term is really having a robust and engaged advocacy community in the food space in New York. And so it's making sure that our partners who are running successful community food anti-hunger programs like farmers markets and urban farms, nutrition education, have a seat at the table in a real institutional way. So they have strong relationships with their elected officials. They are not intimidated by the policymaking process. They know how and when and where to get involved and speak up. They're listened to, and they're really driving the conversation of what kinds of policies and government funding is happening in our city in a much deeper way than it is happening right now.
And one thing I just want to highlight, because I just think this approach is so critical, and I'm not sure that it's happening in many other ways, and this is what Equity Advocates is about, is not speaking on behalf of folks in the community, but really facilitating the community members to be at the table and to be driving the conversation and to be determining the kind of food policy we need in New York City. So I think that is critical to underscore that it's very much in aligned with what Why Hunger is supporting around the world. In we take a back seat and really work as a support organization to ensure that those who are on the front lines are also at the table.
Exactly. And those folks that are on the front lines, as you said, have been doing this work for decades. And these leaders, which we found are, you know, most often women and people of color, they have deep, deep expertise in the food system and in their communities. And we really miss out as a community, and policymakers really miss out when they don't listen to those voices. And so as you're saying, we really see our role as taking a back seat and providing the infrastructure and support so that those community voices can be driving this conversation.
And by those voices being in such a key role in the conversation, what is their reaction to that? I mean, what does that mean for them?
That has been one of the most interesting parts of this kind of work, is being able to have those conversations and find out what's needed. So before Equity Advocates actually launched, we spent about a year holding community conversations and essentially asking groups like this, what would you want to say if you were part of this process? Do you need this? Do you want this? And we heard over and over and over again that community leaders who are doing this anti-hunger food access work recognize the value of policy change. They want to be at the table. They want to be the ones driving the conversation, but they just don't always have the time, the resources, the political connections to do that. And so this has been really positive. We've been able to, over the last year, mobilize over 200 New York City community food advocates to get engaged in some way that they wouldn't otherwise have been able to. So whether it's meeting with their elected official or submitting testimony at a public hearing saying, this bill is great, but it needs to do A, B, and C to really have an impact. And so that's been the most exciting, is to be able to see these voices who are so critical and want to be part of the process actually take some of those steps and get involved.
And many of these people, correct me if I'm wrong, Leah, have started in their communities food pantries and soup kitchens and other kinds of food access organizations, including community farms and urban farms. And they're seeing the demand for food pantries and soup kitchens is increasing. That's what we're hearing from them, that in 2018, New York City pantries and soup kitchens fed 5% more people than the previous year, while 34% of New York City pantries and soup kitchens reported having to turn people away, reduce their portion size, or limit their hours due to a lack of resources. And fundamental systems change is what is going to ultimately make a difference in those folks that are seeking those resources. And folks that have been running these food pantries and soup kitchens for 30, 40, some 50 years, they want to see an end to it. They do not want to exist.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing need rise. And whether that's due to, threats and reductions in our federal safety net programs or concerns among immigration communities here in New York City, you know, we're seeing folks who have full-time jobs, who maybe have multiple full-time jobs, who still have that kind of need. And so that does put a strain on these kind of organizations. And so one other thing that I would add is that we've seen that a lot of the groups that are, you know, may have started out running a pantry or running a food access program are now trying to build in opportunities for those kind of programs to be job creators, to help create jobs and keep dollars in their local community through the local food system. So whether it's, you know, moving from sort of supporting a charity model where nonprofits are sort of dropping in and providing resources or foods, actually investing in worker-owned co-op grocery stores or culinary nutrition programs that are providing jobs for community members, we're seeing programs try to figure out ways to really address those root causes in some really exciting ways. And so we want to see our city government and our federal government really support those kinds of initiatives.
Very interesting discussion. Leah, I want to thank you for joining us in our program this morning. Certainly good luck with the work of Equity Advocates on the web at nyequityadvocates.com. Thank you for sharing with us in our chat today.
Thank you so much.
Well, Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, before we wrap up and in our discussion, we should review a few things about Hungerthon, because Hungerthon, I mentioned this earlier in our discussion, really starts November 1st, but runs through to the end of the year, December 31st.
Correct.
Big day is when?
Is on Tuesday, November 26th. We will be taking over the airways and really bringing you messages of the work that Why Hunger is doing on the ground and why it matters, and also encouraging you to donate. Visit hungerthon.org in the meantime, and then on Tuesday, you can call 800-5-HUNGRY.
Okay. Hungerthon.org, the website. You can go there, get information on some of the things that we've been talking about here today. You can also make a donation in support of the efforts of Why Hunger. Allison, as always, thank you very much for coming in and joining us today.
Thank you. Much gratitude for being here yet again.
And let's hope for a very successful time with Hungerthon. Last year, over $1 million was raised in Hungerthon. Let's hope that's exceeded this year, too. And yes, you can be part of the solution. Remember that. Keep that in mind, especially on Tuesday. But literally, you could be right now. Well, that's going to do it for our program this morning. Let me just mention the fact the NFL preview will be along shortly. Rick Wolf and Sports Edge happens at 7:30. JJ, the Morning Line, is along at 8:30. And, of course, that Football Sunday program, Melusis and Deal, happens at 9 this morning. Our thanks for the technical direction this morning to Kevin Wall. I'm Bob Salter. We'll see you next Sunday morning here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.